Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At-Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At-Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Keith, middays on the WEEI Sports Radio Network.
This is about, in football, no one cares what you did last year. The history books will care, and it's wonderful, and six Super Bowls is great, but if you're going to continue to do this, you better start picking better players. I mean, I remember last year when I said something after the draft that, man, the Patriots didn't do much to help whoever the quarterback's going to be. And I got shouted down, oh, they took two tight ends in the third round. You know, but these two tight ends have done absolutely nothing. You know, how often is that kind of stuff going to be not necessarily overlooked, but sort of glossed over? And I think Bill has to realize now that his roster, and I think he probably does, is at an immense talent deficit. There's no offensive player on that team that scares anybody. It might be the worst set of skill position players in the NFL. And at some point, you know, if it doesn't get better, there's going to be some 4-12 seasons.
Nick Cattles, Andy Hart, in for Dale and Keith on this New Year's Eve day. Thanks for joining us as always. It is much appreciated. We had Peter King on the show about 15, 20 minutes ago, and you just heard what Peter said about the possible future of this franchise. If things don't turn around quickly, we could have several 4-12 seasons on our hands. Andy, simple question to start this hour for you. What we're witnessing now with the Patriots, is this rock bottom?
I think it is. I think there's a great opportunity to rebuild on the fly here. And I'm not saying, I mean, we need to reassess our standards, I think, to some degree, and what the bar is and where the bar is set. But this is a team that, I mean, Peter says 4-12. Well, they could be 6-10 after Sunday afternoon. The Jets are rolling a little bit, and who knows how the Patriots play, whatever.
Don't you wish they'd be 6-10? I mean, that gives them a better chance to have a better pick at this point, right? What's the difference between 7-9 and 6-10? You might as well just...
I've been saying that since the fourth quarter of the last Jets game when they were down 10. And you had a chance to knock them out of the first pick and move closer to it yourself. But I do. I think there's a great opportunity draft pick-wise, regardless of where they pick, whether it's 14th, 15th. And I think there's a scenario where maybe they can move up as high as like 10 or 9.
Yeah, there
so
is.
They're going to have a good draft pick. Better than they usually have.
Yeah.
They're going to have $50, $60 million, depending on the salary cap. They have, I think it's 10 draft picks they're going to have to use overall, mid-round picks. There's going to be quarterbacks available. There's going to be all kinds of free agencies, trades. Other teams, by the way, might be in cap hell that may need to unload some people. You have So there is every reason to believe, if you have faith in Bill Belichick and this organization, that they're going to be a more talented football team next year. And therefore, they were close this year, right? The path just ended a little while ago. All those path believers thought you were a playoff contender a couple weeks ago. There's every reason to believe you're going to be a better football team next year. I firmly believe that.
So let me ask you this. You've been around Belichick for a long time. How do you think Belichick's feeling about this season right now? Like, if he walks into his office, he slams the door shut, what is he saying and mumbling to himself about this season?
To steal a phrase from him, about what I expected. I think he knew they weren't a very talented football team. I think we started to see hints of those comments with the salary cap stuff with Charlie Weiss on Sirius and playing young players and just some of that stuff. I think he knew to some degree what he was in for.
Right.
And, you know, it kind of played out that way. They're a,
so let
they're
me
a
ask you,
500 team at best.
Let me ask you this then. We know how angry and frustrated a number of fans are. I don't think it's all fans. You know, just like anything else in 2020, a lot of the vocal minority is just angry vocal minority, and that's why they want to kind of vent. They vent to us, which is fine. We vent. We yap into microphones 4 hours a day, right? But, you know, some fans that are just angry and frustrated at the idea of what this team is. How angry, how frustrated do you think Belichick is?
I don't think he's angry. I think he's sort of in a state of resignation. Like, yeah, this is what this is for this year. It is what it is, to steal his phrase. Now, if this goes forward, you know, the end of the OMF interview the other day where he said looking forward to next year and coaching better and competing better and all that. Now, if it rolls forward and we're getting too early next year and they're losing games and their draft picks don't look like they're ready to play and even this year's draft picks aren't ready to play and, you know, things that he expects or hopes to be better based on what he does in February, March, April, May of this offseason, if they're not better and you're still scuffling and you're going down what Peter just said, multiple seasons of being non-competitive, non-playoff team, looking up at the Dolphins and the Bills in the division, oh, then I think he'll be angry. Then I think he'll be frustrated, and you'll start to see that shine. But I think he's realistic, and we've all said, how long have we all said that the most amazing thing about the Patriots dynasty is that it's lasted so long?
Yeah.
Like that they've been able to stay so good for so long.
Yeah, what do you got? You got the Spurs, right? The Spurs dynasty lasted for a long time. The Red Wings also had the dynasty lasted for a long time. Another question for you. Somebody that we don't talk about enough, honestly, when we think about the future of this team. I'm with you, by the way. I think this is rock bottom. I don't think it's going to be worse next year. Robert Kraft. What do you think Kraft is thinking to himself when he shuts the door and he's sitting in his office?
I think the same thing. You know, even as a businessman in his different ventures, you have more peaks and valleys, right? For whatever reason, whatever industry it's in, you know, they have the paper company. Wow, you know, this happened and the pulp in China did this, so we have a down year, or, you know, not as many people moved, or, you know, blah, blah, blah. Whatever the reasons are, every industry goes through ups and downs, right? Doesn't mean you're dying. Doesn't mean you're toast, like, you know, Blockbuster Video. Huh, should have seen this coming. Blockbusters aren't really a thing anymore. Videos aren't really a thing. Like, I don't think we're in that situation with the Patriots. They're in a down that should have come sooner. Everybody has downs in this sport, especially this sport, where it's built in a certain way for parity and turnover. And, you know, the NFL loves to put out their releases. Oh, for the seventh straight year, six teams that didn't make the playoffs the previous season made the playoffs or whatever. They do that every January because they're proud of it. They're proud that every fan base should go into it thinking, this is our year, or next year's our year. We're building.
Right.
Like, they take pride in that, and the Patriots have been at the top of the mountain for so long, so consistently. I think Robert Kraft would take that. Now, again, if it's continued, if it's extended, that's a different story, and then I would bring in another name. Robert Kraft is transitioning to Jonathan Kraft, right?
Yeah.
Jonathan Kraft runs the day-to-day Patriots in a lot of ways. He is going to probably view it differently, because as he takes sort of the top notch on the organizational depth chart and is more visible and more vocal and sort of the guy people talk about, well, then it's going to be like, well, did the dynasty end with Robert Kraft? Like, there'll be some pressure on him to be the next generation, literally, of the Patriots dynasty. So, yeah, I think Bill Belichick, Robert Kraft, they've been in business, in football, in industries that are hard to, you know, stay successful in for a long time. They were overdue for this year. And again, this year really wasn't that bad. You were in December, and what's that guy's name again? I forget the Sunday Night Football guy analyst every name. Kornacki.
Steve Kornacki.
You were still on his touchscreen up until a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
Like, you were still in the mix,
right?
And that's your bad year. If that's your bad year, things are still pretty good.
The reason why I ask you those questions about Belichick and Kraft is because I want people to put themselves in those two guys' shoes. I want you to think about what's going on this season from their perspective. And the reason why I want listeners to think from their perspective, not from the listener's perspective, but from Belichick and Kraft's perspective, if you think of it from their point of view, that's why I think this is rock bottom. Because as Andy said, both with Belichick and Kraft, they'll be okay with this year. Not that they're happy with it, but they'll say, all right, one down year. But if it continues, and that's the but. And when I think about Belichick and Kraft, what they're thinking right now is urgency. Kraft is in his 70s. As you mentioned, Andy, transitioning to Jonathan. Belichick is 68 years old. Both guys know they don't have a very long time to continue their life in football. And when you have urgency, you have motivation. And I think both Belichick and Kraft look at this team and say, okay, that's 1 year. It was an awful year. It stunk. We weren't good enough. And we'll be damned if we come back in 2021 and have another season like we just did. Because I think you've got two guys who are full of pride, both have gigantic legacies within the game. Think about Kraft's power within the league, right? I mean, think about his role with the CBA and the television contracts and all that. And think about him saving the Patriots for New England. I mean, his legacy speaks for itself. Belichick is known as the GOAT of coaches. These two guys ain't going out like that. At least they're not going to want to go out like that. Now, if they've lost their skill and their ability and Belichick just forgot how to evaluate football players, the game has passed him by. That's something that will show itself maybe 2-3 years down the road. But right now, what we know of these two individuals, they are two of the best at what they do. And when you have somebody who is the best at what they do failing, it drives them more crazy than it will ever drive a fan. And I've got to imagine that Kraft and Belichick, they slam that door and they're biting their lip and they're saying to themselves, just wait. When this season is over, and we walk into the offseason with $60-plus million of spending money, and we have our draft capital, just you enjoy prancing about on the grave of the Patriots. Buffalo Bills, enjoy your billboard. Enjoy your division championship, because 2021 is going to be a different damn story.
And I also go back to, I think in a weird way, they benefited from having their potentially worst year, down year, non-playoff year, abysmal offensive year during a pandemic. No fans were allowed at Gillette Stadium. Robert Kraft did not have to open those big sliding windows to his luxury box and hear boo in the third quarter or the second quarter when the offense has two field goals and when, you know, the 49ers are wiping the field with them or you're losing to Drew flipping Locke and the
chanting
Broncos.
Chanting for Stidham as the offense continues to stink.
Stidham. Cam sucks. Cam sucks. Like, none of that. It was like sort of like this antiseptic environment where you know what's going on. I'm not saying you're not getting run over by the 49ers. You're not getting beaten by the Broncos. Like, you still see the losing. But don't you think it would have felt different for them to hear that natural energy? Or even worse, because you start to talk about it as a business perspective, they look down. And now all of a sudden, Monday night against the Bills, you're like, A, there's a lot of Bills fans here. B, why are there empty seats? And then the Jets game. Like, you look at a Jets game. This Jets game this Sunday might have been like a preseason game where you're looking at empty seats everywhere, sections of empty seats. But they'll all be empty because no one's allowed in. There's no paper bags. I wouldn't be surprised if some fans, to be funny, would have gone to, like, the paper bag where they show, like, you know, four drunk dudes with their shirts off from college and they got, like, paper bags over their heads because this is Patriots fans going back to what they used to be in the early 90s. None of that existed this year.
Yeah.
And if you do what we think they're going to do, take advantage of the opportunities at hand come March, come April, come May, when fans are back in the stadium, which we're all, I think, hopeful for and looking towards maybe next fall, you might be back. You might have a much better feel, better weapons, better offense, better fun, better environment, where you skipped right over that down year that in places like Jacksonville, they go, hey, should we cover over those upper deck sections, put a company's name on it? Because no one sits in those anymore. You didn't have to live through that. You benefited from the pandemic in a weird way.
You did. You absolutely did. Teams that struggled. It's like, you know, what the Houston Astros went through this year. Do you think the Houston Astros would have made it as deep as they did if it was, you know, normal times, quote unquote, and they had crowds and legions of fans screaming and, you know, just oozing vitriol towards them all season long? Do they have the same success? I don't know. It'd be tough to, you know, believe they would. And I know people, and I see the texts. I see, you know, one person specifically from the 207 who keeps pounding the idea that Tom Brady's the greatest and it's, you know, Bill Belichick. It's the only reason why Bill... You know, we've heard that a lot. We've heard that a lot. And, of course, the drafting track record and all that. Couple of things. Number one, it's tougher to have a pristine track record drafting when you're around for 20-plus years.
Yep.
The more drafts you are involved in, the more times you're going to swing and miss. Right? So that goes without saying. Look around the league. I understand that Patriots fans are kind of in the Patriots vacuum because it's really the only team that you truly care about. And so you're so honed in on the Patriots. Look around the league. There are lots of GMs that swing and miss on draft picks. GMs run hot and cold. They'll have a stretch of great years. They'll have one or two or three down years where it's, you know, less than 50-50 where they hit. That's the way it works. And I know that people have this idea that, like, I don't know if you expect Belichick to hit every single season. This year's draft class, right? Let's look at this year's draft class. Kyle Duggar looks like he's going to be a stud. I'm a fan. And if he's not a stud, he's going to be pretty damn good. Second round pick? Okay. How many people were snickering about that draft, right? When they drafted him. Looks like he's going to be a player. Josh Uche looks like he's going to be a player. Put in his role, athletic, pass rusher, stuff like that, looks like he's going to be a player. Michael Onwenu is known as one of the best picks in the entire draft this past April. So those are three picks that look like really good picks. That's a good draft. If you find three or four guys that are going to be good to very good, that's a really good draft. So we might want to pump the brakes on the last three or four drafts and actually say, well, 2020 might have been a pretty damn good draft. Guys like J.C. Jackson, he wasn't drafted, but he was a UDFA. He's at least, at worst, a number two corner. Maybe develops into a number one corner. That is part of the process. So, you know, we've got to look at the big picture. And we've got to realize that with 20-plus years on the resume, you're bound to have some stinkers, man. You just are. And so I'm not telling you that overnight this team is going to be a 13-win monster. But I'm sorry. I don't think we will see a 2021 Patriots team that wins four or five games. And Shime, you can keep the audio. We can go with the old takes exposed or whatever the hell it's called. I don't think you're going to see a 5-win football team. As Andy mentioned, you know, look at some of these games. Cam doesn't fumble against Buffalo. They at least tie that game, if not win it, right? You finish the block against Seattle. You win that game. There are things. You could talk about the Arizona game maybe going the other way. But this team was a couple of plays away from being 9-7. So the NFL is a lot of mediocrity, man. And that's what people fail to recognize, Andy, because they've been so entrenched in this, you know, last 20 years of winning every single year and taking divisions and getting to Super Bowls. The reality is the NFL is full of mediocrity, full of average teams. You've got five or six contenders. You've got five or six suck teams that have no chance. And then there's everybody else.
Right. And you want to find yourself on the high end of that or upper middle class of that group next year. That's what I think is you don't. I think it's unrealistic to say you'll be in that. I think you just said five teams that are legitimate contenders, legitimate Super Bowl teams. I don't think you're going to be in that quickly. But there's nothing to say you can't be sort of that upper middle class where you're a playoff team. Everybody says, yeah, they're a playoff team. I don't have them in my Super Bowl contender mix, but I think they should make the postseason. The one thing I will say is I think you're a little less critical maybe of the recent drafts than I am. Like, I think this year could be – I think this year is a Devin Asiasi
year deserves
to break out.
He deserves
but before
criticism.
That, there's some downs.
Yeah,
there's first
listen,
round, there's
absolutely.
Second round. That's
absolutely.
Part of why you're in the position you're in.
Yes.
I mean, part of the reason we all have wide receiver among your top two or three needs
right.
is because N'Keal Harry stinks, right? Like, you used a high pick that didn't pan out there. And so there's been some hits, there's been some misses, but I think there's been too many misses of late, and that has compounded the fact that a guy like Tom Brady leaves.
I agree with that. I'm talking about the big picture. Because ultimately, what does this offseason come down to? This offseason comes down to whether or not you trust Belichick. And to answer that question, I don't look at just the last three or four drafts. I look at the entire picture because the guy has built a reputation off of what he has done, right? So the entire picture, he's been good. He's been a good GM. I don't think he's been spectacular. Nope. I don't think he's been incredible. But his entire stay from beginning to this point, he's been good. He's been a great coach. He's been a good GM. So,
but does age matter? That's the question.
That's
because
the question.
The second yep. half is not as good as the first half of
Correct.
His tenure.
Correct.
And if you believe, I always use the example, you're riding in your grandmother's car, and she's getting closer and closer to those damn mailboxes, and you're like, I'm not sure she should be driving this car anymore. She's going to clip one of these mailboxes soon. If you believe age matters, if you believe 68 is old for a GM, for an NFL guy, Then you go down the road is, could he have lost a little something on his fastball? Could there? You know, I know there's some talk of the drafting and him overruling and the things we've talked about for years. And, you know, he doesn't trust his scouts maybe as much as he should. And maybe when he overrules, maybe the overrulings are what get him in trouble. There's a lot of stuff there. And some of that, if you believe it's age-related, but you just said it. That's going to be one of those things you're going to know a year or two too late, right?
Right.
You're going to say, oh, yep. Yeah. He got old a few years ago. And it's hard to predict at the time. It just is. There's no 40 time. There's no, like, measurable where you can say, Bill isn't doing this the same speed or same accuracy as he once was, like he's an athlete, right? So,
right.
Unfortunately, 2 or 3 years from now, we could be doing radio and saying, yep, yeah, he lost it. He definitely lost it. I wish I'd known at the time.
Yep. And, you know, when we look at these drafts, again, was 2020, if it goes right, if Duggar ends up being a really good player, and, you know, I think there's no question about Onwenu at this point, and if Uche ends up being a really good player, and if one of those two tight ends end up being good tight ends, right?
If Devin Asiasi, let's say it's Asiasi, like the athletic pass-catching tight end, if he had a tough year, right, between COVID, the personal issue, leaving the team, he had a tough year. If he is a pass-catching tight end next year, you're looking at this and saying, wait a minute, they got a starting caliber tight end, a top two tight end, they got a Pro Bowl caliber safety, they got a Pro Bowl caliber offensive lineman. That's a pretty, and Josh Uche is a key front seven player. I'm sorry, that's a good draft. But
yeah,
there's some ifs there.
Yeah, there's ifs, of course, because it's been 1 year and it's COVID and no preseason, no rookie camp. My point is, if the 2020 draft ends up being a good one, inevitably it's, well, was it the anomaly within 5 or 6 years of bad drafting, or was that the beginning of kind of turning back to what Belichick was before? And 2020 was good, 2021 was good, and then that's what you mentioned. 2-3 years down the road, we look back and say, well, yeah, he had a bad stretch, but then he turned it around starting in like 2020, and then the next 3-4 years, he was good. Nick Cattles, Andy Hart, in for Dale and Keith. We'll have Michael Irvin coming up next here on Sports Radio WEEI.
We're back to Dale and Keith with Cattles and Hart on WEEI.
Well, you can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody.
Nick Cattles, Andy Hart, in for Dale and Keith on this Thursday. And joining us on the Harbor One Hotline is NFL Hall of Famer and NFL Network analyst Michael Irvin. Michael, brought to you by the Department of Veterans Affairs, Wilmington Builders Supply, your local Anderson Windows dealer, and by Zuti. Build any apps your company needs in a week. Visit Zuti.com for details. Of course, you can check out Michael's podcast, the Michael Irvin Podcast, kind of easy to remember the name, on Podcast One or wherever you get our podcasts. All right, Michael, thank you for joining us. As always, we appreciate your time. As I said, Nick Cattles, Andy Hart, in for Dale and Keith today. As a number one wide receiver, Michael, how would you have coped with a quarterback struggling as much as Cam has struggled this year?
It would definitely be hard, you know what I mean? Because when things are going bad, you want to be the one to pull your team out, you know, to give your team something, some way, somehow, some reason to say, let's go, we can do this. And no matter what you're doing, no matter how well you're running routes sometimes, no matter what you're not going to get that opportunity. So this would definitely be a tough situation to handle if I was playing with Cam and seeing some of the things I see right now.
Michael, this is a big picture question, tough to answer, but do you believe that the Patriots have bottomed out? Are they going to be able to turn the corner and start working and moving forward this offseason?
I think they will. I think you got to first find that guy that you're going to play with, that quarterback. And I always tell people this, man. It's just, it's hard when you're doing it this way, you know. And of course, you know, Bill Belichick has had such great success. But when you're patching this thing together and you're losing football games with the quarterback that you know will not be there in the future, you know, as opposed to losing games with the quarterback that you know is young and you're going to be there in the future with him, and he's losing games, but he's learning, so you know you're going to benefit somehow from the losing later. Right now, you don't see that. And this is this is hard when you're in it. Okay, the Chargers, they're losing games. But they know sooner or later Justin Herbert's going to start winning games for you.
Right.
So the losing, you're at least learning why he's losing. So, you know what I mean? You can accept a little bit of it. It's just hard this way because it's losing on lose. It's not like I'm going to benefit from this losing later. So that's why when people ask me, there's no way Cam's coming back next year. There's just no way. You can't risk another year of doing this. You got to either say, hey, let's find a young guy or let's move on. Or let's find a more experienced guy, another experienced guy, that you pass the ball. I don't know. Maybe you get a Matthew Stafford or somebody that shakes loose, and you go in that direction as opposed to certainly dealing with what you deal with this year.
Michael Irvin with us here. Nick Cattles, Andy Hart, in for Dale and Keefe. Your rookie season, Michael, in 88, you played 14 games. You guys ended that season at 3-13. How tough was it to finish that year out with, really, from a player standpoint, not much to play for?
It was hard. That whole year was hard. My rookie year, that was, oh, my God. That was really the most difficult year I probably ever had in professional sports. I thought it was even more difficult than when I had my knee injury and trying to fight back from that. We were an older team then, and a lot of guys just were kind of a little set in their ways. I didn't think that they were really, really about winning anymore. You know, they were surviving or trying to are making money as opposed to winning. That was hard. I'm not saying that's where the guys are in New England right now, but that's certainly where we were back then. And I'm going to tell you something, literally, honestly, man, I'm not lying to you. I put this on my children. I would cry after every game because I wasn't used to it. I was coming from Miami, man. We were killing everybody in Miami. Now that I'm here, when I got drafted, I kicked off my hat. I had a big old Kangol hat on. I had a rope. I said, it's over. I thought we were going to do the same thing. And every week we lost. I couldn't. Oh, my God. It ran me crazy. And then the next year, I thought, you know, we talk about we get the young quarterback. We got Troy Aikman. He's a nice, good young quarterback. I said, oh, we got it now. And after losing 13 games the first year, we lost 15 the next year.
Yep.
I was like, wait a minute, somebody send me back to college. So it was in the end of the year. You know, everybody, you're trying to get up. You got no hopes. You're not going anywhere. So now you're trying to fill your gas tank with spoilers. Spoiler doesn't give you the boost that playoff gives you. I don't care what, you know, you can get in there. You can get in there and play with spoiler, but spoiler ain't the same boost as a run in the playoff will give you. It was very difficult, buddy.
We all assess players as they age, and you look for, oh, has he lost a step, or, you know, can he not beat the blocker as a pass rusher quite the way he used to, or is his accuracy going? How do you assess aging coaches and general managers? Because Bill Belichick is 68 years old, and we've heard people question whether he is the man to rebuild this Patriots team. How do you tell if a GM and a coach gets old and the game has passed him by?
Well, honestly, your realization or understanding or discovering of this is more difficult than most because of the resume of the guy that you're talking about. You know, how do you say Bill Belichick, okay, we think it's passed you by? Really? In the last 20 years, I've been to, 9 Super Bowls? In the last 20, you see what I'm saying? How do you say it? And yeah, we're starting to talk about, okay, you don't have Tom Brady anymore. This thing looks stale. You know, it's just you just can't say that to that guy right now. Now, how do you normally start telling? You start seeing a game that you start seeing the game pass the guy by. Let me pick on somebody here. Let me pull out somebody to give you an example. I got it. Jeff Fisher. I thought the game passed Jeff Fisher by. I like him as a person, but I thought the game had passed him by. And then Sean McVay comes in with the same exact team, and we started saying, wow, where did this team come from? It was the same exact team, but it brought all the new stuff in that lit a fire under the team that gave this offense something, gave it a spark. That these are the things that you were not getting with Coach Fisher, and I think that's the kind of it. That's an indicator that maybe the game had passed them by.
Michael, last one from me again. Nick Cattles, Andy Hart, in for Dalen Keefe. Michael Irvin with us on the Harbor One Hotline. Let's say you're a player now, right, and you're a free agent, and Bill Belichick is interested in you, but the money that you can get, because, of course, a lot of times it just comes down to the money, if not every time. If Belichick is offering you the same kind of deal that another coach is offering you, right, but that other coach is coming off of a winning season, and Belichick is coming off of 7-9 or 6-10, would you go to Belichick? Would you still believe that he could be the guy you've seen the past 20 years? Or would you go to the other team and say, well, they won more last season, and I believe that's more of the future?
That's a great question. That's a great question to look into, man. To answer it in this blind manner without more things is very difficult. There are a lot that I would have to lay on the line. There's an opportunity to be with Coach Belichick. If you're asking the question, is that still attractive? Absolutely. Absolutely. That's attractive. I don't care what you say. That's attractive. Now, what you need is to be with Bill Belichick, but to make sure if I'm a quarterback, I'm like, well, what are we doing to upgrade the positions? I love what's at the head coach. I love that. I love discipline. I love the way you run the football team. But let's just talk about what else are we doing to upgrade the talent, because obviously there needs to be an addressing of that situation, especially the outside talent.
I'm going to throw a question at you that's difficult, but I just want your gut reaction. Next September, the starting quarterback for the New England Patriots will be?
I don't think we know who he will be right now. It all depends on how this thing falls loose and shakes loose, what goes on in the offseason. You're not getting a top guy out of the draft, but do you go find it? Does Bill and them have their hands on some young guy that they really like, that they think that they've scouted, that they know more about than somebody else? It's just difficult to figure out who that person would be. I think it's interesting that we all thought it would be Stidham starting, and even at this place and at this point, you're not trying to run Stidham in there right now and say, let me get an understanding about him, at least for next year. Let me get a little understanding about what I can do and how far I can go with him right now that this thing with Cam has already flooded out. But I guess Bill is monitoring how he handles all of that because, hey, he probably enticed a veteran to come, and now he has to hold up to his end and let the guy play it out because he knows other veterans are here about it. So you know, there's that, too, that may be having some type of a play here.
Michael, thank you for the time. Have a great new year, my friend.
Guys, listen. Let me tell you something, everybody, too. I want everybody to have a great new year. And it should be easy to have a great new year because we had a hell of a last old year. Let's make sure we don't just wish you goodbye. Let's kick his ass out of here. Goodbye. Happy new year, everybody.
Thanks, Michael. Happy new year.
Thank you, Michael. Great stuff.
All right, guys.
There you go. Kick 2020's ass right out the door. Yep. Michael Irvin, as always, on the Harbor One Hotline, brought to you by the Department of Veterans Affairs, Wilmington Builder Supply, your local Anderson Windows dealer, and by Zuti. Build any apps your company needs in a week. Visit Zuti.com for details. And don't forget the Michael Irvin podcast. Zdeno Chara, talking to the media right now, said a couple of interesting things, Andy. We'll get to those things coming up next. It's Nick Cattles, Andy Hart, in for Dalen Keefe on a Thursday.
We're back to Dale and Keith with Cattles and Heart on WEEI.
You know, I think was, as we all know, was a very busy offseason for every NHL team. But, you know, at kind of, a few days ago, basically, you know, I think that Washington Capitals kind of informed us about their interest. And, you know, I just saw, you know, this opportunity that I didn't want to pass on upon. So I just decided that that would be, you know, good for, fit for me and my family. And I went for it.
Nick Cattles, Andy Hart, in for Dale and Keefe on this Thursday. Of course, that's Zdeno Chara speaking to the media right now. As we speak, he's speaking. And he just told the media he believes he still has a lot of gas left in the tank.
I'm not saying it's empty. I'm not saying he can't make it home, but the gas light's on. And you got that little countdown meter telling you how many miles you got left, right?
Right. Yeah, I don't think there's I don't think there's a lot left in the tank. I think that is a pro athlete with lots of pride, you know, really takes pride in his physical condition, as we know, works his tail off in the offseason. He'll be the last guy, I think, to tell us that he has no gas left in the tank. And he's speaking with the media now. And before we get to more of what he said, I want to ask you a question, Andy, because, you know, some people feel like the Bruins hung Chara out to dry, that they signed Kevin Miller on like the first day of free agency. They get that wrapped up. Then what, 80 plus days later, we find out that Chara is not returning and he ends up with the Caps. Do you think that the Bruins could have done a better job as far as handling all of this and, you know, maybe just maybe waiting on the Miller deal to see if Chara was a possibility, or you think they did things pretty much on the up and up and they just made a decision that a lot of people, or at least some people, I don't want to say a lot, at least some, if not most, or the majority of people disagree with?
Yeah, I think they were, I mean, reading the tea leaves, the comments from Chara's agent yesterday on Twitter, I think they sort of tried to be respectful, but make it clear there wasn't a lot of interest on the Bruins' part. Like, you're not going to have a big role. We're going in a different direction. And I thought it was interesting. He said the last few days, you know, the Washington deal, like, kind of came to fruition in that opportunity. So that would lead you to believe, because you had the report yesterday, you know, there were multiple teams were involved, you know, interested in Chara.
Yep.
And that maybe this is the right opportunity. I know Joe Haggerty talked to the morning show, Gary Tangway and the boys, Fred and Steve, today, and said, you know, this was a good opportunity, not just because of the team, but the location, that the family is going to stay in Boston, and he feels like he can kind of commute, jet back and forth, get back and forth from Boston to Washington, that that makes it a more palatable opportunity for him. So I think there was the waited out on his part, what am I going to do? And maybe I will retire. The Bruins wanted him to retire, like we've heard, apparently. And I think the Bruins were honest. I think they tried to be as honest as possible. Like, we want you as a part of the organization. We respect what you've done. But on the ice, for our best interest, we have to move forward in kind of a different direction, the young direction, as he pointed out on Instagram.
Yeah, and Chara spoke about that communication just a few moments ago between he and Sweeney. And here's what Big Z had to say.
Well, again, I respect the way it was communicated to me, Kevin. You know, like I said, we had number of conversations. You know, early on, it was probably a little bit unknown what I'd been told what the role would be. But as the conversations progressed towards the end, I was pretty, you know, kind of, it was very clear to me that I would not be in a starting lineup for the season or starting, you know, some games or playing some back-to-back games. And you know, I would be more in a kind of reserve kind of a type of player. So, you know, I again, I have no issue with that. Again, you know, Don Sweeney did, you know, a lot of credit to Don Sweeney, how he handled the situation. But again, for me, I feel that would be better fit for me if I kind of find better, you know, role with other team and kind of step aside and let Boston Bruins go with the direction they chose to do.
So you know, obviously he felt like his role was going to be more of a seventh defenseman, you know, not playing back-to-back games, maybe not playing in some games, even if it wasn't a back-to-back. There was a follow-up to Chara. Here you go.
So this sounds like more of a robust role that you're looking for, that you've been, you know, not necessarily guaranteed in Washington, but that you envisioned in Washington. Do you see it as sort of 20 minutes a night in Washington, or
nothing is guaranteed in Washington?
So that was Kevin Paul DuPont with the follow-up there. Nothing's guaranteed in Washington, but it's rather obvious that Char is okay with how it was communicated with him. He's all right with how the Bruins handled this. Now, it could be Char just being professional,
right,
and, you know, making the Bruins sound better than they really were, or Char is, you know, spitting it straight to us right now, saying, no, they were good communicating the role to me. And again, they kind of told him, you're a seventh defenseman at this point. We want to bring in the young guys, and if we can transition the young guys in, which is another issue, all amongst itself, is if you're Chara and team management is telling you, hey, we're going to bring in some of the younger guys, and you're a seventh defenseman to start the season, man, you know, what if those young guys play pretty well? Now, if I'm Chara, I'm on the outside looking in. I'm not dressing for these games at all.
And we talked about this a little bit yesterday as it was unfolding. Sometimes it's easier for the legend to just move on than for the legend to find a newer, lesser, you know, complimentary, unsure role. And I do think that sometimes puts pressure on coaches, right, and GMs and, you know, what's happening here. And you always have that aura, and he's a big dude literally and figuratively, the shadow of him over these young guys. And, okay, they didn't play well. Well, a lot of questions, you know, maybe they're not quite ready. Maybe it's time to go back to Chara. He should be playing more, blah, blah, blah. Those are just they're non-existent in Washington. And it is interesting that he says nothing's been promised, because as soon as he said it was clear I wouldn't be in the starting lineup, I wouldn't be playing back-to-back nights, some of those things, the implication in your head is, oh, you're going to be in the starting lineup in Washington? Like, is that
right,
what you've been promised, or you've been promised a certain role? And I would like to know, and that's where I don't think you're going to get an honest answer, what they've promised him or what the expectations they have mapped out in Washington, because it could, if it's the same role, then it even feels weirder, right? So low money, and if he's like this extra defenseman for them, then you get your sort of sentimental side says, why couldn't that have been in Boston? But it isn't as easy to take a step backward as it is to go to a different place.
Yeah, he was a captain, right? And it would be very weird to be a captain, and I don't know how you could be a captain when you're a seventh defenseman not playing right consistently. And it also tells you, I think, an awful lot. You know, Washington gave him no guarantees, which tells you how he felt about the role the Bruins had laid out for him. Like, he's not even going to a team that's going to guarantee him anything, but he's saying, well, I'd rather take that shot than stay here in Boston because of what they told me. 617-779-7937 is the telephone number. The text line is 37937. Nick Cattles, Andy Hart, in for Dale and Keefe on this.